And welcome into the Monday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. We are presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Property managers, if you manage it, they maintain it. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com for more information. Joe Rex Road, happy Monday morning to you. How are you?
I'm good. It's a heck of a Monday in this country, and it's a way too cold of a Monday in this city, which I'm trusting this is it, right?
I hope so. I mean, the rest of this week looks better for sure. I'm sure that we're going to get, you know, like a 2-week stretch in March where it just feels cold all the time, because typically that happens. Every now and then we get a couple in April too, where it's like, wow, it's been cold in April for 7 days in a row. What's going on around
but
here?
Not 20, right?
We're not
going to get 20.
I hope not.
Yeah, I thought we were done with this, but a little bit of shock to the system today, but doing all right.
Ian Safar, how we doing? What's going on?
Good morning. Happy Monday, everybody. Doing just fine, thanks. Good weekend. Saturday, got outside some, did some park stuff while it was nice, got the kiddos out. Yesterday, mostly inside, hung out, watched some stuff, but happy Monday, doing great.
We got a lot going on the program today. Alex Doherty will be with us at 7:30. We'll get into Team USA's win against Canada with him, and look ahead to what is going to be a very quick trade deadline that is approaching for the Nashville Predators. All that coming up later in the show. Corey Curtis for his weekly visit at 8 o'clock. Tennessee gets the win on the road against Vanderbilt over the weekend. We will get into that a little bit later in the show as well. But, Joe, let's begin with Kenny Albert's marvelous call from yesterday's 2-1 win for the United States of America against Team Canada in overtime.
Here's McDavid moving in on Jack Hughes. Tries to slow him down. Puck lines up behind the net. And it's Werenski. Now Jack Hughes pokes it around the car. United States with numbers. Back across it comes. Jack Hughes wins it. The golden goal for the United States. For the first time since the 1980 miracle, the United States takes the gold. Jack Hughes beating Jordan Binnington.
Jack Hughes gets it done. Team USA wins the gold medal for the first time since 1980. And the Miracle on Ice, they take down Canada 2-1 in overtime yesterday. First off, Joe, Kenny Albert, absolute nails. Like, he's just awesome. And he was the entire Olympic tournament. He could not have called that better. Good stuff from Kenny Albert there. Connor Hellebuck, an absolute legendary performance yesterday that, you know, it will go down obviously in Olympic lore and Team USA hockey history lore. Frankly, I think it changes a lot of the conversation on him and his entire career. What he did yesterday is unbelievable from Connor Hellebuck, and Jack Hughes gets the game winner. The United States wins the gold for the first time since the Miracle on Ice. What a game. What a time yesterday.
Incredible. I mean, it really, like, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but I mean, for a while that game, I was like, I don't know that I've seen a hockey game like this. Like, I think it was the fastest game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Am I overreacting to that in the moment?
I don't think so.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I watched some college hockey, and I understand, like, even like college hockey in the NHL, even now there's a big, you know, like, there's a big difference. The gap's gotten a little closer, but like, I just watched a little bit like on like Thursday or Friday. And then it's like you watch this and it's like, oh, my God. Like, it's hard to believe it's the same sport. It was an incredible game. Like you said, Hellebuck. I mean, you got a big David breakaway. You got a Celebrini breakaway. You got that paddles. I mean, he was, and you stopped. I don't know if the 5-on-3. I don't remember if he had any incredible saves in the 5-on-3, but you stopped a 5-on-3 against that team.
Yeah.
Like a minute 44 of 5-on-3 or whatever it was. Unbelievable, man. And I agree with you. I think, Albert was awesome. I mean, Tirico, you know, the whole thing was, they did it exactly. You know, they harkened back to 1980 really well. I've seen a lot of, you know, kind of whining about, you know, the 3-on-3 and everything. And it's like, well, we all agree that it's not ideal. But, like, you do, with a 3-on-3, throw out McKinnon, McDavid, yeah, McCarr, right?
You lose me. Like, look, I don't love 3-on-3 overtime deciding a gold medal either. I don't, and we've talked about that heading in this. The Canadians lose me on that when you have McDavid, McKinnon, McCarr, Celebrini. Like, that should absolutely favor Canada. So if you're going to whine about it, maybe get 97 to put one in the back of the net a couple of times, you know?
And I just like the McKinnon quote, you know, you judge who's, but like, there's no question. I mean, Canada dominated a lot of that game. But again, that's a goalie's part of your team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he made the difference. He was the equalizer and then some, right? I mean, that's what it is. Not that Bennington wasn't great himself, but I'm just saying, like, that's also part of a hockey team. It's kind of the most important part of the hockey team. And he made the difference. Well, I don't think we can overstate how amazing Hellebuck was.
He made a ton of great saves. He made four or five that were just unbelievable. Like, the paddle save, obviously, is what's going to get the – I mean, it was crazy that he got the paddle on that. But he made – I mean, you're talking about world – like, McDavid and Celebrini and McKinnon, like, from the slot where you're stopping most of these shots. Like, Canada – from the second period on, Canada was an absolute machine. And I mean, the U.S. was – they had a couple of moments in the game, but they were holding on. I mean, they were holding on for dear life. And they got, you know, the power play opportunity at the end, the four-minute. And then Jack Hughes took the high-sticking penalty. And as soon as Canada got the power play there, I was like, oh, boy, this is not going to go well. And then you find a way to drag it out. You get it to overtime. And we've – look, you know, 20 minutes on the clock for a 3-on-3 overtime of that skill level, I knew it wouldn't take very long. I was just wondering what it would be. It took less than 2 minutes. But it's just a heck of a play by Jack Hughes to chip it around there. And then Werenski basically just out-muscling McKinnon to get the puck. That's great stuff there. And then, you know, Jack Hughes made – I thought, you know, leading up while they were on the power play – he tried to cut inside and basically go 1-on-3, and he lost the puck. Puck ends up in the corner, and he takes a high sticking penalty there. And I was like, oh, no, man. Like, you're just trying to do too much. And then they kill that off. And he talked about that in the post game. He's like, you know, I put us in a pickle there, and they bailed us out there. But it was just a great – when you get a world-class player that much room, as soon as he got the puck, I knew it was going in. Like, it was a great shot by Jack Hughes there. And – the golden goal that, you know, most of my life over the last few years, when you talk about Olympic hockey, Crosby's goal comes up, right? And Crosby's goal is, I mean, it's legendary. When, you know, Sidney Crosby is going to end up being, you know, when everything's said and done, probably one of the five greatest hockey players to ever play. And on the very short list of things that people are going to talk about when he gets done, you know, even with the cups and all the points, are going to be the golden goal that he scored in Vancouver. And this is like the American version of that now. Like, is this Jack Hughes? This first time they've won an Olympic gold medal since 1980. It's 46-year drought. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, it's amazing, man. And it is. I do think it's just a huge deal for, you know, just for American hockey at large. You know, they talked a lot on the broadcast, about what 1980 did. You know, obviously. No question. I think 1980 meant a lot for hockey in this country. I feel like you're already seeing, like, this team is already sort of the manifestation of what's been going on, right? I mean, like, this team, you know, Canada's a better team. Like, they're a more talented team. They controlled a lot of that game. But, like, this also was not David Goliath. This is a great hockey team. And I feel like there's just got to be so many people who watch this game who weren't familiar with hockey. I assume that. If you watch that game, how do you not have, you know, more appreciation for hockey? Like, how did it not earn and win over new fans yesterday? I have to imagine it did.
Yeah, you would have to think so. And look, you know, with the way the game played out, I mean, Hellebuck stole the show, and he deserves all the credit that he's getting today. So let me start there. The most skilled play of the game was Boldy's goal by far. I mean, it's unbelievable the goal that Matt Boldy scored in the first period. He chipped it around Devontae's and Cale McCarr, and in midair backhanded it back to himself and then scored on the breakaway.
That was
it's a heck of a play. I mean, it's just unbelievable skill on that play from Boldy there. By the way, John Hines, assistant coach of the Olympic gold medal team of Team USA. Coaches don't get any medals, but he was on the bench. So there you go.
I assume he coached Boldy up on that play, right? Probably John Hines' influence.
Yeah, a lot of Minnesota Wild running around out there. No, it was unbelievable. You know, the game itself, you know, I was having this discussion yesterday. Was the actual game, in terms of just the way that it played out, was it better than 2010? I mean, if you're an American, yeah, right? Like, you won the game. You know, there was a lot of drama in 2010, too. I mean, Parise scored in 2010 with, like, whatever it was, 30 seconds left, and tied it up. You get the overtime. It was a great game. So, like, was this the greatest game ever played? I don't know. I do think you're right. I do think it's probably the fastest game it's ever been played. Like, and that's just, I mean, look at some of the players that were on the ice. I mean, it's McDavid and McKinnon and the Hughes brothers.
At,
like,
max intensity.
At max intensity.
I mean, like, yeah.
It was awesome. And, you know, I did see a lot of people who I know don't normally watch hockey watching this yesterday and be like, is this what this is all the time? And it's like, well,
yeah,
no, but this is the max level of what this is, and it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, no, but like, okay, now check back in the spring and watch some playoff hockey.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like more people should love hockey. And so I hope that this leads to that because more people should love it.
One texter says, that was the best sporting event I've ever watched. Emotional, breathtaking, toughness from both sides. Lived up to every expectation. Matthew from Jolton says, the gold medal game crapped on the last two Super Bowls combined. David in Arkansas says, Hellebuck truly amazing. 5-on-3 had me scared. He was a beast during that time. The win was one of the most amazing things I've seen in my lifetime. And sports brought me tears of joy. It was awesome. Awesome stuff from Team USA yesterday. We'll take your thoughts on the Americans winning the gold medal for the first time since the Miracle on Ice in 1980. They take down Canada 2-1 in overtime yesterday. More coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Team USA wins the gold in best-on-best hockey. NHL players winning the gold for the first time as Team USA. Canada in 2010, Canada in 2014, and USA gets it done here in 2026. Taking your thoughts on that, 615-737-1025. It's just legendary stuff from Connor Hellebuck. I mean, you know, he is, you know, if he continued on and never did this, Joe, and say they never, like, won anything of consequence in the NHL in Winnipeg, which they're probably not going to, you know, by the time his career is over with, I mean, you're going to look at his numbers, and there's going to be a Hall of Fame case. Like, he's going to end up with probably 400-something wins, which is an insane amount. I mean, he's already at 335. His career save percentage is .917, goals against .257. Like, he's one of, if not the best goaltenders of, like, this current generation. He's won the Vezina Trophy 3 times. Like, he's gonna have a Hall of Fame case anyway. Yesterday, he's in. Like, that's what yesterday did for him. He is a Hall of Famer now moving forward. I mean, that's kind of the, from an individual standpoint on him, I think that punched his ticket yesterday. And then you get into what I saw some people kind of batting around yesterday. Like, when you consider, you know, American athletes, the stage of that game yesterday, when's the last time somebody played as well as he did yesterday, like in a high-stakes situation? I think a lot of people's answer on that, Joe, was Steph Curry in the gold medal game against Paris, which is probably the one I'd go back to as well. But that's kind of what we were talking about yesterday, of how good he was.
Incredible, and I think you're dead on. And look, it's an entire – it's a narrative changer for him because he has been, you know, he's had some well documented postseason struggles after incredible regular season performances, and that's not, you know, you don't want to be known as the, you know, the great player except when the pressure's at its highest. And now, I mean, that's over.
Yeah.
Now on the flip side, as we were talking about during the break, MVP. Connor McDavid, again, he wins. He's incredible at winning MVPs when not winning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that's a tough one for him. That's a tough one for – he is the best player, and there's no question about it. But, like, this was a – I mean, you had the team like to win here. You know,
no,
and didn't.
I've said this before. Like, I mean, with when you're talking pure ability, he's the best player I've ever seen. Like, and he's better than Crosby. He's better than like. And keep in mind, like, I was not alive for prime Wayne Gretzky, so I have no reference point to that. McDavid is the best player I have ever seen. But you are talking about it like he has not won a cup yet. He's lost two cups in the cup final. He just lost and got a silver medal yesterday. Like, and you know, I'm not pinning it all on him. But at some point he's gonna have to start winning some of these things, right? Like if he's going to go down as one of the, you know, two or three best players to ever play the game when it's all said and done. Like, winning has to be part of that, right? Like, it can't just be – and I know it's not every – like, people take it too far the other way sometimes where winning is the only thing that matters. It's not that. Like, McDavid could retire right now, and I'd still make the argument to you that he was one of the 10 best players to ever play the game.
Sure.
But at some point, like, you're going to have to win one of these, aren't you?
Yeah, you would think – yeah. I mean, some people don't – you know, some people don't win a championship who are great players. For I always come back to Barkley, like Charles Barkley, one of the greatest players I've ever seen. Never won a championship. I mean, it happens, but yeah, like this team, you know, because you could look at like the Oilers and whatever. I mean, they've obviously had they've had flaws, right? Like you could say he's elevated them to even getting them to the point where they'd be that close. But like this team had everything, so
yeah
he didn't win.
Well, and it's not even just the not – like, he didn't have a point yesterday, and there have been some game sixes, game sevens in cup finals where he's – I don't know if disappeared is the right word, but he's just not – he's not put up the numbers. That I mean, you – every time – like, in the NHL now, every time McDavid gets through a game and he doesn't have, like, two or three points, I'm like, wow, did a pretty good job on McDavid, right? Like, I think the Predators beat the Oilers a few weeks ago. And one of Yossi's quotes after the game was like, yeah, we held McDavid to two, so that's pretty good. Pretty good stuff out there. So, like, that's the type of player that he is. But, you know, right before Hughes scored, he had two chances in overtime. Like, Canada got the face-off, the opening face-off, and they take it back. They kind of wheel around, and they did it. And you could see it on, like, the top of the broadcast. McDavid wheels all the way from the blue line, all the way back through the neutral zone, up to the other blue line. And gets a full head of steam coming. And when he was caught, I was like, oh, my God, no. Like, I don't know what you do with that. And he whiffed on the shot. He got another chance right before Hughes got the puck and scored where he drove it to the net and Hellebuck stoned him and took him out. And then the U.S. went the other way. But, I mean, there were two chances in overtime where you had him barreling down on you with a full head of steam and nothing.
Well,
did not come through.
Yeah, the breakaway.
Breakaway.
Yeah, you made the point on Twitter, like, I mean, he did. He tried to stuff it in there, but it's like you're watching that, and I was like, man, you have to shoot that.
Yeah,
you know, you get like you have to pick a spot.
It kind of felt like he was waiting for Hellebuck to move, and Hellebuck didn't. He just stuck with him, and then he tried to stuff it at the end.
Yeah. It's like you can't. I mean, break away in the gold medal game. Like, you got to like that's it. You got to do it.
Yeah, and you know, McCard with a great shot. That was the one that got through Hellebuck and beat him there. But you know, Team USA, I thought the first period is pretty even. I mean, I don't remember what the shots ended up being. It was like 8-8 or something like that after the first. And you know, Team USA had a heck of a first shift. Canada took over for about the first 10 minutes
right away.
They did. And then Boldy scores the goal, and I thought for the last 5 minutes of the first period, USA, they could have scored two or three more, and that was it. Like, they didn't have anything for the next basically period and a half in that game.
Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, and for them to hold on the way again, I mean, you look at Hellebuck first. I mean, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
A lot of texts from people who had different, you know, red, white, and blue beers. There's a lot of, I must say, I had some buddies who found a place that was open. They're sending me videos of, like, doing, like, shots of the big, like, boar and everything. I celebrated the golden gold on a card on the way to church. I just wanted everybody to know, like, whoa! Had it streaming in the car. So, but Ryan in Florida says he couldn't watch it. He had church, but the preacher was giving score updates.
There you
so
go.
That's nice.
Now I celebrated by screaming, and then my toddler started crying. So that's what I did. That's what I did yesterday. It was awesome. I mean, look, obviously, you know, I have a background in hockey. I love hockey. I was thinking about this yesterday. I mean, it was one of the greatest sporting events of my life yesterday. It was awesome. I loved every second of it. You know, the question now is, tangibly, what sort of impact does this have on the league, right? Because, I mean, look, all due respect to the Predators and the Blackhawks coming up on Thursday. Like, the quality of hockey is not going to be the same, right? Like, it's not you're going from the gold medal game to the NHL regular season. And look, I've said this before. The NHL right now, I think, is in the best spot it's ever been in. The quality of hockey is outstanding. I love it on a nightly basis. There's really good stuff going on out there. It ain't what we saw yesterday. So I do think, though, like, come playoff time, that's where I'm really interested to see. Like, are people all of a sudden going to be, like, huge Jack Hughes fans moving forward, or Quinn Hughes fans moving forward, or, like, you know, what sort of, like, did individual players, like, none of those guys are Crosby, right? Like, I made the golden goal comparison earlier. Like, the Team USA doesn't have Sidney Crosby out there, but do you latch on to this team the way that we've seen in other sports teams get latched onto when you have the impact that they just had?
Yeah, I have to think that there's some people who are, and I've seen some of it, that are like, wow, I mean, that's what it is. Yeah, man, like, give it a chance. I would have to think that'd be the case. The people of Winnipeg, that's an interesting, like, I mean, it's like,
I'll throw another one at you. The people of Toronto,
yeah,
with Austin Matthews. It's, yeah, like, oh my God,
yeah,
can't win anything here, and he just leads them to gold.
Yeah, there is that for sure. I feel like some of the particular whining about the game seemed to come from, like, Toronto, yeah, hockey media. But, yeah, in Winnipeg, it's like, we love you, Connor. Did you really have to be that amazing? Like, did you really have to? And please, I will definitely be like, please, can we have some of that,
yeah,
in the playoffs?
Yeah,
please.
Just totally rip your heart out. And that's the thing.
Like, no, Winnipeg's not doing so.
Yeah, they're probably not
going
to make it, which is the most amazing thing is – and I know he's been hurt for a decent chunk of this year too, but
next time they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, next time
they're
in the playoffs.
That's the expectation, Connor.
It's like, wow, you have to steal every game the way that you just played there. It was unbelievable stuff. And, you know, some people were asking about, you know, like, obviously Crosby didn't play. How much of a difference would that make? I'm not going to sit here and act like Sidney Crosby couldn't have made a difference in the gold medal game. I mean, certainly it would have made a difference. But, you know, would they win the game? I don't know. I mean, look, there were no shortage of great chances from great players that Canada had in that game, and they couldn't score. So I have no idea.
Yeah, players in their prime.
Yeah.
Who, you know, yeah, like, he's not. But, yeah, obviously he's the captain, and I've heard a lot during the tournament of the settling force out there. And I'm sure. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you know, it's games happen all the time
when teams don't have their full complement of players. Yeah. I mean, Predators didn't have Ryan Johansson in the Cup Final. That same Cup Final, the Penguins didn't have Chris Letang in the Cup Final. I mean, there's games that happen all the time in hockey that you don't have your full complement of players.
Yeah, especially in, you know, sports like hockey and football, you know.
Yeah.
Usually you look back at, like, a Super Bowl 10 years later, like, oh, wow, they were missing this guy, this guy, this guy, and I forgot about that.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on Team USA winning the gold. We will get into Joey Aguilar's decision that went down over the weekend a little bit later this hour as well. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Team USA wins the gold yesterday against Team Canada, 2-1 in overtime. Taking your thoughts on that. We will get into the Joey Aguilar situation coming up here in just a few minutes. Also, the Vols on the basketball front getting a big win at Vanderbilt over the weekend, so we'll get into that as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. One texter says, this win will affect USA hockey more than anything. Younger generation playing mini sticks will act as Jack and Quinn Hughes winning the gold medal for the next few decades. Another texter talking about the play that McAvoy made earlier in the game where Hellebuck was scrambling out of the net. McAvoy jumps in the crease, makes a save there. Big play in the game. Probably doesn't get enough credit, but, you know, we said it, Joe, the strength of USA and why I was really intrigued in this matchup is, you know, if you're trying to go, like, fire wagon hockey back and forth, blow for blow with Team Canada and their forwards, that's not a very good formula. But the strength of USA was their goaltending and their defense. And I think you saw that yesterday of you know, Quinn Hughes makes a big difference back there. They didn't have him in Four Nations. He's pretty good. McAvoy got hurt in Four Nations. That's their top pair, Quinn Hughes and Charlie McAvoy. It's pretty darn good, man. Like, it's a pretty darn good pairing. And their defense was on full display. You know, Canada got their looks. Hellebuck had to be great. I also think Team USA did a lot of did a good job for a lot of the game of, like, just limiting the damage when they were in the offensive zone, which is hard to do against that group of forwards.
Yeah, no doubt. Speaking of Jack Hughes, Ed on the YouTube chat says, good for Jack Hughes, the kid would get hurt walking in a field of daisies.
Mm.
You know, the Mike Sullivan said after the game, you know, some they were talking about the construction of the team.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, so there's milk drinkers and whiskey drinkers. We got whiskey drinkers. I will say, I feel like Jack Hughes maybe needs to, you know.
Drink some milk?
Yeah. Well, or maybe needs to, like, you know, I don't know, put on a few pounds so he can handle his whiskey a little better.
Yeah.
Woo! those guys got after it.
Yeah, Quinn was feeling good on the.
Or Quinn, too.
Well,
yeah.
Both of them. Quinn, yeah. Quinn was feeling good on the interview with Mike Tirico. There's no doubt about that. Floyd on YouTube says, my wife cares nothing about sports. And asked me several times as he walked through the kitchen what the score was. That's a big game.
That's how you know.
A lot of my family doesn't love hockey in the same way I do, but they're all in for this. Like this, you know, it's when it's best on best, and we've seen this in other sports, not just hockey. Like when it's best on best, you know, I've seen some big soccer games. I'm not a huge soccer guy, but USA World Cup and a big game,
yeah.
I'll get into it.
I mean, 100%.
I think that's there's a lot of people yesterday that kind of fit into. To that category.
Yeah, and that's actually a good point because as I talk about, like, this should be something that I agree totally with, like, kids and stuff, like pretending to be Jack Hughes and quit. I mean, I think that's obviously what you hope. But soccer, when you bring up soccer, I mean, that's exactly what I am. I'm like I'm not a day-to-day soccer person. I don't think I ever will be. I respect it a lot, but – yeah, I get into the big. I guess there's probably some people who are like that. Like, yeah, I mean, I'll get if Four Nations, you know, happens again, or the next time there's Olympics, I'll be in. But I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna follow hockey. I just would throw out there again, playoff hockey. Pick a series. If you find a game seven,
yeah.
I mean, watch it. I promise you, like it's really good stuff. I mean, there's nothing that you can quite. Again, there's just in sports, you so rarely have basically all-star games that matter, you
yeah.
know, that matter so much, right? It's just hard to have both of those things together. So,
well, and
there's nothing like this exactly.
I'll have more to say on this a little bit later in the show, but like, you can't tell me, like, if you're the NHL and you're the NHLPA and you've got, and I know the NHLPA has wanted to do this the whole time. And look, we've talked about, you know, Crosby got hurt. And he's not hurt that bad because he gave serious consideration to playing yesterday. So we'll see what that looks like. Obviously, Fiala got hurt. There is a, you know, an inherent risk of sending your best players over in games that have nothing to do with the NHL. The guys are going to get hurt. And for the teams where that happens, yeah, it sucks. Like, it sucks for the Kings that Kevin Fiala is hurt for the rest of the regular season and is not going to be a part of their playoff push here. So I get that part of it. But you also, like, can't tell me that on the whole, yesterday's not worth it. I mean, come on, man. Like, what? There's more eyeballs on your – I don't know what the numbers are going to end up being. I'm sure it'll probably come out today. You know, is it going to be more than it was in 2010? I don't know. I mean, 2010, I think, if memory serves me correctly, the game was at, like, 1:30 or 2 in the afternoon. And, you know, yesterday
yep.
was 7 in the morning. So,
yep.
it may not be. I don't know. But I know this from – both the game going on yesterday and the aftermath of it and how many people were talking about it that have never talked about hockey in my life, you can't tell me that's not worth it. I mean, you just can't. I'm sorry.
I agree. And really what is needed is as much tangible evidence as possible. You know, the ratings will be one thing, but that's what's important. I mean, because I'll go back to, again, David Poile. When they didn't go back in 2018, he's like, show me. Like, what – and again, I'm like, no, what are you talking about? Come on, you know? But as much tangible evidence of that as possible, the better. K-Dot on the YouTube chat says, my mother-in-law told me she watched her first full hockey game and was interested in watching more. There we go.
Yeah.
How about these pictures from Hughes with no teeth?
Yeah.
I mean, all-time stuff, right?
The photo of him with the teeth out, with the flag draped over his shoulder, I mean, if that's like all-time stuff right there.
Yeah. Speaking of all-time stuff also, getting the Gaudreau kids out there.
That was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a moment, man. To bring it, I mean, that was pretty emotional.
Yeah, good on Larkin and Wierenski for going in there and getting them and Matthew Tkachuk. It was pretty awesome stuff. Alex says, I'm 33, very passionate about hockey. There are no question yesterday was my generation's miracle on ice. Like, you know, to your point, Joe, like in terms of like the upset factor of it, it wasn't the same. Like it wasn't like Team USA didn't match up with Canada, but just the moment of actually doing it and beating them. The 2010 Olympics, USA beat Canada. It was just in the round robin, right? USA beat Canada last year in the Four Nations. It was just in the round robin. So to do it when it actually counts and when it matters, I mean, it's a huge deal. It's a huge deal for USA hockey.
No question. Yeah, I mean, look, this is a rivalry.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. And that's a heck of a lot of progress to get it to that. Yeah, Miracle on Ice was college kids against unbelievably good Russian, Soviet pros. I mean, like, which, by the way, also, sign of the time. I saw this thing. I never knew this. Bill Bonds was a longtime beloved news anchor in Detroit. So for people who don't know, Miracle on Ice was tape delayed. So it happened. And, of course, back then, there's no internet, so like they could wait and play something in prime time, which they did. They played the game in prime time that night, and people could like would not know because like the newspaper, unless there's like I don't know an afternoon edition, but Bill Bonds in Detroit, they had a promo for like the 11 p.m. news, like we'll talk about the U.S. big win over. It was like, dude, there's like 3 minutes left in the third period. Yeah, I had no idea that happened, but yeah, talk about how different things are now versus then.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We will get back into Team USA's win throughout the show today. Alex Doherty will be with us at 7:30. Corey Curtis coming up at 8 o'clock. Take more of your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. The Joey Aguilar situation got its finality this weekend. We'll get into that coming up next and what happens with him from here, what happens with Tennessee at quarterback from here. We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joey Aguilar's preliminary injunction was denied on Friday, which means that the quarterback room right now for Tennessee is Faison Brandon, George McIntyre, and the kid from Colorado whose name is currently escaping me, who transferred in over the summer, who I hope is not going to be the starting quarterback. Ryan Staub, that is his name.
There we go.
So those are your three quarterbacks currently in the room for the Vols. You know, it was going to be interesting. I didn't know which way the Aguilar ruling was going to go. Obviously, you never know with these things nowadays. But now that there's some finality on it, let's just start on the Tennessee front. What do you make of this news if you're Josh Heupel in Tennessee and you're trying to plan this thing out for next year? And now what do you make of what we know is going to be a very inexperienced quarterback room for Tennessee coming up in the fall?
Well, at least there's clarity now. So he would have been the starter. If they had an expectation, it'd be more on this side of things that this would not have worked out for him. So now it's a competition, like you said. If Staub, who to me is added for depth and like a just in case kind of break glass in case of emergency type situation, if he ends up on the field, that's probably not good, for Tennessee. You've got some really talented, a couple of talented young guys. Look, I mean, George McIntyre, there was buzz about him last year for sure, like from practices and things like that. Some buzz, probably a little bit exaggerated, that maybe he could actually push, but you just really, to me, he's the ideal situation, I think, is that he's the starter. Now, look, if Brandon is, I guess you could look at it one of two ways. Okay, so it's just, like McIntyre hasn't isn't as good or, you know, isn't doing what they hope or whatever. He's not quite there. And you just have to resort to the freshman or, oh, my God, this freshman's so good. Like, you just have to to go to him. But, man, I feel like that year in the program should make a lot of difference. And I understand that Brandon is a higher-rated recruit, but it's not like there's a Grand Canyon between them and in their, like, recruiting profiles coming out of high school and coming into college. So I think McIntyre starting this year is ideal, and you hope he's great. You know, you're gonna have some bumps in the road, but you hope that he's ready for it and that that he's ready to win football games in this offense. And then it's like, you know, does it become a quarterback competition at some point? You know, stuff like this, when you have two guys that are pretty close to each other just a year apart in class, it's hard to hold on to both of them. You just hope that one of them turns out to be a great quarterback.
Yeah, and you hope you choose right. You know, that's the other thing. Like, you gotta pick the right one. Like, you know, I think if you're a Tennessee fan looking at this, you say, well, there's a lot of talent there, right? I mean, they Faison Brandon, high-level recruit. George McIntyre, pretty high-level recruit. So you feel good about the talent that's in the room. On the other side, it feels like a very critical year for Josh Heupel. We've gone over the schedule for Tennessee next year. It's not easy. Like, they've got a pretty difficult schedule next year. And the idea of starting, you know, a really young quarterback, whether it's Brandon or McIntyre, because I'm with you. Like, I think if it's Staub, that's probably not good. I mean, I understand that they just picked up Joey Aguilar, who was an afterthought at UCLA, and he came in and ran the offense really well. So maybe they can do that again. I have no idea. But I wouldn't think that that would be very good news if you're Tennessee, if it plays out that way. You know, if it's McIntyre or Brandon, you're talking about a young quarterback in a critical year for your coach. And it's also, to me, Joe, pretty clear that, I mean, Tennessee tried to go get a veteran starter, and they just couldn't, right? I mean, they had Sam Leavitt in there. They couldn't close the deal with him, obviously. They, you know, I guess your backup plan is hoping that Joey Aguilar gets his injunction granted here. He didn't. So I'm not saying that Tennessee's not okay or, like, there's no way they're going to be good with George McIntyre or Faison Brandon starting. But obviously, like, this was not the plan. Like, they tried to go get a starting quarterback, and it did not work out in the portal.
Yeah, and it would the outlook would be different with like a Leavitt, you know, for sure, or somebody like that. So again, this is kind of how it used to be in college. Well, okay, well, your quarterback graduates, and now you're gonna have to go to a younger quarterback. You hope in that era that you'd have maybe someone more like a third year sophomore or junior or whatever, you know, ready to step in, but. Even back then, you'd have a fair amount of situations where guys would recruit out, or transfer out, you know, because they were gonna have to wait 2 years or whatever. Yep. So, it's. I think that expectations for this team now probably get a little bit more, you know, lower a little bit, but also I would think that it would be kind of exciting for Tennessee fans to. I mean, it's not like when you have a high-profile, coveted recruit quarterback who comes in and spends a year. Obviously, it happened with Nico, and he came in, and he was not as good as everybody hoped. He wasn't a Heisman candidate like everybody hoped, but he was like, I thought it was a pretty promising first year as a starter. That can happen in college football, you know? So this is an amazing opportunity for George McIntyre, and he's going to be pushed by a super talented player.
What do you think this means? I mean, obviously Aguilar is going to take a shot at the NFL now, and I'm sure he'll be at the combine, and we'll see what all that happens. Like, you know, most of the stuff I've seen on Aguilar, if he's drafted at all, is like sixth or seventh round. So I guess that's where my expectation would be here. What do you make of the Aguilar part of this in terms of, is there any shot that he could turn into a serviceable NFL player at some point?
I can't sit here and say no way. You know, look, you know, watch him throw the ball last year. Pretty good. You know, it's turnovers here and there that were costly. But in the year before, and when he came in, it was like, man, this guy threw a lot of picks, you know, the year before. But, no, I think he helped himself a lot. I think he's got a shot. I think he really did a good job in that 1 year of, like, his teammates liked him a lot. He seemed to be a pretty good leader at quarterback, you know, and he throws a good ball. I mean, I think he's got a chance. Yeah, I think if he's drafted, it's going to be late for sure. But again, a year ago, there's not even any conversation there.
Yep. Right?
There's no conversation whatsoever. Apparently, he was going to go to the combine for like a little bit was the plan. Yeah. Depending, and then just to sort of keep the options open. Now it's like,
just go, man.
Yeah, just go. Yeah,
yeah.
You got to be all in on the NFL now.
Yeah. So Tennessee, we'll see how that plays out for them. That quarterback here, but you got Georgia Tech on the road this year. A conference schedule that obviously includes Alabama. You've got LSU coming to town this year. I mean, you got Texas. Like, it's going to be a really interesting year for them in terms of what sort of quarterback player they're going to get, because you've got Braylon Staley coming back. You got Mike Matthews in there. Like, there's some weapons that the quarterback is going to have that are pretty good. So what level of quarterback play are they going to get? And what's going to be really interesting here is, like, what does Heupel do let's say there is a quarterback competition between McIntyre and Brandon and it's close. What do you do there if you're Heupel? Because a lot of Tennessee fans will be like, well, if it's close, go with Brandon. His ceiling's higher. Just get him in there now and let's go and build it for the next few years. I'd be very interested to see what Heupel would do in that situation.
To me, you just have to go with who's best. Even if it's close, you're better. You earned it. But upside, got to go. No, you don't do that. You don't do that. That's just, to me, this is a meritocracy. So you can't, and in particular, Josh Heupel, but even if he wasn't in this position, I hate that mindset. Who's better? Play the person who's better, period. That's it. And with Heupel, I wouldn't consider Heupel on the hot seat. I think some people have to look at the season and say, like, playoff or bust, or Heupel's on the hot seat. I think that even might be a little much, but it'd be good to have a good season. And so you are absolutely just going with who is, even if it's just a little bit better. Now, maybe early in the season, I'm trying to think. They got a couple games you can mess around with, right?
I think I can't remember if it's Furman or whoever it is. They open up with a cupcake, and then second week they're Georgia Tech.
Maybe it's a situation where they both play.
Yeah.
And you got practice, and then there's a difference when it's actually a game in front of thousands of people. I don't think that's the worst thing, but yeah, it's a competition, and now if it's even, if it's exactly even, well, that's awfully impressive for a true freshman. Maybe you go that way.
Furman, and then at Georgia Tech, home against Kennesaw State, home against Texas. First four games for Tennessee.
Okay. There's some opportunity in there.
There is.
615. I haven't figured out by Texas.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll switch gears, get into some college hoops coming up next. Tennessee gets a big win on the road against Vanderbilt over the weekend. Reaction to that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.